Good mornings, I'm Chris Oaks, and coming up today, Senator Sherrod Brown shares his reaction to the $600 million settlement announced earlier this week between Norfolk Southern and the village of East Palestine following last year's train derailment disaster. Also this morning, in our salute to service, celebrating the 116th birthday of the U.S. Army Reserve later this month, and the many career advancement opportunities provided by today's Army Reserve. And we have another collection of yummy and easy-to-make recipes from Kyra's Kitchen. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Friday, April 12th, 2024. Maybe you can use this as an excuse today to just kick off and take the day off. A new survey of 1,800 pet owners, 7% of pet parents have left a job to find a new one in order to take better care of their pets. 7% have actually quit a job because it doesn't allow for work-pet balance, apparently. 60% of pet owners say in the survey they would consider leaving a job if it conflicted with their ability to take care of their pet. 41% said they would be willing to take a pay cut to work in a pet-friendly environment. Only 39% of individuals believe that they currently work in a very pet-friendly environment. 47% feel that a 47% consider that a high priority when deciding whether to take a job. I can honestly say that I have never considered whether or not my job was pet friendly. How taking a job would impact my pet. Never have considered. Maybe I'm missing out on something. I don't know. But if your coworkers, one of your coworkers calls in today, maybe they just need some pet time. What it is. So the top news story yesterday, the death of O.J. Simpson, and it was a bit of a shocker. Apparently he had been diagnosed and was undergoing treatment for cancer. I completely missed that. I did not hear about that, but I guess a couple of months ago that story was out, and passed away yesterday at the age of 76. The Pro Football Hall of Fame released a statement about O.J. just hours after his passing was announced. Hall of Fame says O.J. was a one-of-a-kind player who was twice named to the All-American team and was a Heisman Trophy winner. Goes on to say that his on-field contributions will be preserved in the Hall's archives. He was elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1985 and, of course, became very controversial figure for reasons we all know. But man, that was my first initial reaction was this when I found out he had passed away from cancer. I've always said that cancer is just a terrible disease that I would not wish on anyone, but maybe we can make an exception. That was the first thing that crossed my mind. And I almost posted that on social media, and I kind of stepped back and said, well, maybe that's too harsh. But the reason why I didn't post that, what that thought that popped into my mind, was because I didn't want to disparage those other people other than OJ who have had cancer. You know, that's who I thought that was too cruel to post. So it just, again, That was where my mind was, and that kind of, I think, reflects on, you know, our legacy with OJ, is that it wasn't that I was concerned about disparaging OJ Simpson. I was concerned about disparaging anyone else with cancer and be construed as if I was making light of that. But I don't know. It's just a how are you supposed to feel about the passing of OJ Simpson? That's what I wonder. How are we supposed to feel about that? Anyway, some of the other things that are going on here this morning, among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Tax deadline day coming up on Monday. This is your final weekend to finish up your taxes if you have not yet done so. This I thought was kind of interesting. Another survey commissioned by the banking app Chime finds that 52% of Americans, the 2,000 Americans that they surveyed for this, 52% say that that they rely on what they've learned in school in their everyday lives. Just 52%, a little over half. They would go on to find in the survey that 55% will trust Google more than their own knowledge from their schooling. Have you ever done that? Have you ever Googled something that you think you know, you think you remember from school, but I'm going to double check. I'm going to Google it to make sure. The average respondent Googled something five times a day with their daily questions. The reason I bring this up in relation to taxes, on the topic of things people wish they had learned in school, 33%, one in three, said they wish they were taught how to do their taxes in school. Kind of interesting. 31% say they wish their teachers educated them about home buying. 23% say they wish they had graduated knowing how to write a resume. About 23% also said that they wish that they had learned how to do laundry in school. And 22% wish they were taught how to change the oil in their car. Which, hey, that's what mom and dad are for, as far as I'm concerned. But I thought that was interesting. One in three wish that they were taught how to do their taxes in school. There is a financial literacy component now these days with kids in high school, but I don't know if they talk about taxes, all of that. I could be wrong. I don't know, but kind of interesting. This, though, a new study out of Paris aimed to determine the connection between trust and attractiveness. More than 350 volunteers participated in this study, and they broke them down into groups where they conducted experiments on economic decision making. Groups would have an economic incentive to determine who they would trust more. And what they found, long and short of it, is that they found that people who were considered more attractive were also, according to the test subjects, believed to be more trustworthy. So you are more trustworthy, apparently, the more attractive you are. And I bring this up, again, in relation to the fact that tax deadline day is coming up, so that when you get audited by the IRS, make sure that you go in looking spiffy. That's... Go in here, your audit with the IRS, looking as good as you possibly can, because attractive people are more trustworthy. So I don't know, just a little tax advice for you there. You want to make sure that that you look trustworthy, I guess. Let's see. Speaking of money, I thought this was a kind of interesting story I heard about yesterday. ProMedica. The Toledo-based healthcare system, ProMedica, is eliminating millions of dollars in medical debt for qualifying patients and just wiping out $222 million of medical debt for more than 108,000 individuals. They are partnering with RIP Medical, which is a nonprofit that buys medical debt at a discount from healthcare providers to help those in need. And ProMedica partnering with this organization to eliminate $222 million of medical debt for more than 108,000 individuals. Those who qualify will be receiving a letter informing them of that in the coming weeks. Kind of interesting. And what else is going on here? Oh, one other item here that I thought was kind of interesting, and you can make of this what you will. The Anti-Defamation League has come out with their latest campus anti-Semitism report card. The campus anti-Semitism report card from the Anti-Defamation League. And this has been an ongoing story over the past year or so, growing anti-Semitism on college campuses. And the Anti-Defamation League has given an F to 13 colleges and universities, including two Ivy League schools, in this report. According to its website, the ADL reviewed 85 schools representing colleges in the U.S. with the highest Jewish student populations and top national and liberal arts colleges, criteria based on administrative policies, campus incidents, and Jewish student life. And among the schools receiving an F in the campus anti-Semitism report card, among the schools earning an F are Harvard and Princeton, along with Michigan State, MIT, North Carolina, and Stanford. Michigan State in there. Only two schools that were reviewed received an A rating for being ahead of the pack when it comes to Jewish relations: Brandeis University in Massachusetts and Elon University in North Carolina. Again, it's an item that's been in the news quite a bit over the past several months. And the latest campus anti-Semitism report card from the Anti-Defamation League. Kind of interesting. Apparently some campuses have some work to do. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Friday morning started.
WFIN News. I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Cloudy today. A chance of showers. A high in the low 50s. Gradually clearing tonight. A low around 40. The Tiffin Police Department says a dangerous nationwide scam involving gold bars and Bitcoin has now reached their neck of the woods. The police department says be on high alert if you receive a call from somebody claiming to be law enforcement and stating that your social security number has been compromised. Police say this is a common tactic used to deceive people into believing that there are fraudulent accounts in their name connected to illegal activities. The Tiffin Police Department says it's actively investigating the scam with the help of the FBI. Get more in the story on our website. 15-year-old Jayla Perry was shot and killed in Toledo last month. Now her organs are saving others.
Perry's family decided to donate her organs through Life Connection of Ohio. And now, six people in different states are recipients.
Despite the circumstances of her death, Jayla had the last word. She was able to save lives through organ donation, which is an incredible life-saving legacy.
Life Connection of Ohio says one person has the ability to save up to eight lives with organ donation.
WTOL 11's Christy Gerlitt reporting. Thousands of people visited Northwest Ohio for Monday's solar eclipse, and now the economic impact is being tallied.
Several tourism boards across Northwest Ohio say the enthusiastic visitors were exactly what they were looking for after months of planning. The Findlay Tourism Board says the city's hotels, restaurants, and stores spent months preparing for the day.
WTOL 11's Melissa Andrews reporting. 90 pinwheels have been put up outside the Hancock County Courthouse, and Randall Galbraith, director of Hancock County Job and Family Services, says each pinwheel represents a child adjudicated as abused or neglected in Hancock County in 2023.
I want them to understand that that Hancock County is not immune to the problem of child abuse, and that it's everyone's problem, everyone's responsibility to help out and alleviate that.
April is National Child Abuse Prevention Month. Get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
So earlier this week, Norfolk Southern announced that they have reached a $600 million settlement agreement in the huge class action lawsuit stemming from last year's devastating train derailment and ensuing environmental disaster in the community of East Palestine in eastern Ohio's Columbiana County. In the aftermath of that disaster, Ohio Senators J.D. Vance and Sherrod Brown, you recall, jointly drafted and introduced legislation aimed at strengthening safety on the nation's railways. Well, a year later, just a few weeks ago, regulations were implemented, but basically the only significant new rule requires two-person engineer crews on most freight trains, which is a good idea for safety, but honestly would have done next to nothing to prevent what happened in East Palestine. Yesterday, we spoke with Senator Brown about the class action settlement and those regulations. Norfolk Southern reached a $600 million settlement in the class action over last year's derailment in East Palestine this week. Are you satisfied with their commitment to making this right and their taking responsibility for what happened?
Well, I will always be skeptical of a company that laid off a third of its workforce, saw its stock price go up as a result, and executives enriched themselves with millions of dollars, and then compromised on track inspections, on track safety, railroad safety generally, on track inspections, on the detectors for the heat sensors that measured the wheel bearing vulnerability. So this probably is a good step, but I want to make sure people don't sign their rights away, because what happens 3 or 4 years from now when people I've met in East Palestine, I've been there 8 or 9 times, when people I met who had rashes within weeks of the exposure, what happens if some of them develop cancer? So it's their decision locally, as it always is, but I work with them and support them with skepticism with towards the railroads and what they've done.
On a related note, just recently, Congress, after a year of studying and negotiating about this, passed regulations that basically require a two-man engineer crew on many of these trains. I know there were a lot of proposals, and that's basically what it boiled down to. Is that enough?
The Brown-Vance bill required two, bipartisan legislation, both Ohio senators, required two people, a minimum of two people in every train, but it required much more. Things like, you've got to let, when these trains go through, if they go through Napoleon or Toledo or Findlay, we don't know, local communities nor the state even knows what's on these trains. So those are some of the things the railroads have to do. And one other thing we need to do in East Palestine is because the railroads provided dollars for local citizens to make up for the damage to their lives, they've been hit with a tax bill. And my bipartisan bill, which has passed the House, will relieve them of that. They just, because they got these dollars, the tax laws required taxes be paid on them. Nobody really planned that or saw it coming, but we're trying to fix that, because I've heard from hundreds of people in East Palestine that thousands of East Palestine people, of residents of East Palestine, will be hit, are now being hit with that tax bill, and we got to fix it.
Want to also ask you about the story that has been making headlines. Nippon Steel has reached a deal to purchase U.S. Steel. I know you are opposed to this buyout.
Yeah, I'm concerned that this foreign steel company coming in and buying one of America's iconic steel companies this jeopardizes our ability to enforce trade laws. We have seen time after time where U.S. jobs have been lost, U.S. companies have been hurt, including up and down the supply chain, not just the steel company itself, have lost jobs because of a lack of trade enforcement. I know this because of Nippon's connection with the Chinese steel industry. We know that the Chinese, again, will take advantage of U.S. trade law, which we're always trying to fix. And presidents of both parties have failed on this, and we've got to fix it. And that's why I'm standing up against this deal and working with the White House to try to stop it.
Just to clarify, you are most concerned about the position that puts us in vis-a-vis trade versus where it would put us with respect to jobs in the steel industry.
No, I'm concerned it is jobs, and trade enforcement is about jobs. When I work with Senator Portman on our bipartisan Level the Playing Field Act, it helped to save jobs because we could enforce trade laws against countries and companies that cheat. It's not just China, but it's much about China. And that's that. I will continue to be aggressive in enforcing these trade laws because in the end, Nippon came to see me about this deal, and they clearly hadn't even thought about workers and what it does to workers, and we know what it does to communities when it causes a layoff of workers. And in the end, workers needed to be at the table. That's why the union and a lot of non-union workers have supported the merger of U.S. Steel and Cleveland Cliffs. It's not for me to say who should buy U.S. Steel, but it's for me to engage in making sure it's not bought by a company that's going to do damage to workers and to our communities.
We will leave it there for now. Again, Senator Sherrod Brown, thanks very much for taking the time.
Thanks,
we appreciate
Chris.
It.
Always, thanks. Appreciate it.
Well, later this month, the U.S. Army Reserve is marking 116 years of service in support of our nation and the generations, plural, of citizen soldiers who play an essential role in our national defense. Soldiers of the Army Reserve are a unique breed. Not only do they have to balance their military service with their family, their personal interests, but also with a civilian career. And obviously, they have succeeded, these individuals, in both arenas. And joining us this morning is Brigadier General Fred Hockett, Deputy Commanding General of the U.S. Army Recruiting Command. This almost sounds like kind of a dumb question to ask, but outside of the obvious, what is the significance of the 116th birthday of the U.S. Army Reserve?
Well, Chris, I appreciate you having me on your program today. The Army Reserve was founded in 1908 as a medical reserve corps. So citizen soldiers who were doctors, nurses, providers, who were willing to drop their civilian career in time of need to support the Army. Since then, we've expanded across 120 different career fields. We've got civil affairs, we've got legal, military historians, as well as more high-tech jobs, public affairs, and cyber drone operators, and military intelligence, as well, and space operations. We've really come a long way since our founding 116 years ago.
You talk about the multitude of ways in which these citizen soldiers serve in the U.S. Army Reserve. What about the soldiers themselves? What are the types of soldiers in the Army Reserve? What do they look like?
So, great question, Chris. We've got a broad spectrum of people that are representative of the nation. Incredibly well-educated. They come from people who are tradesmen or tradespeople, students, as well as C-suite executives. You know, we've got a gold medal Olympian currently serving in the Army Reserve. We've got an astronaut who's done two missions to space. And we've got a country music singer who just came back into the Army Reserve very recently to serve as part of one of our bands.
Are you an Army Reserve soldier as well? I mean, does that extend all the way up the chain of command?
Absolutely. Our senior ranking person in the Army Reserve is a three-star general who serves in Washington, D.C. as the Chief of Army Reserve and the Commanding General of the United States Army Reserve Command.
So I'm curious, what is your quote-unquote day job? And tell us about how you got to where you are today within the U.S. Army Reserve.
So I appreciate that question, Chris, because I'm a little different than most of our traditional serving Army Reserve soldiers, but I enlisted as that traditional Army Reserve soldier in 1987. I did our split option program. I'm happy to talk about that in a little more detail. But after I got commissioned through the U.S. Military Academy at West Point, I did 10 years on active duty, and then I came into what's called the AGR program. And so Active Guard and Reserve, where we provide full-time support for our traditional drilling reserve soldiers during the 28 days between battle assemblies.
So I know for, especially for the U.S. Army Reserve, people come to the Army Reserve through any number of paths, some at any number of places within their lives and their civilian careers. But I think the path that most folks are familiar with are those who enter the military right out of high school. Certainly, the Army Reserve has programs for those individuals as well.
We do, Chris. So a currently serving or a student who's a junior in high school, at 17 years old with their parents' permission, can join the Army Reserve. And just like I did, I went to basic training between my junior and senior year. Mm. And then after basic training, I came back and finished high school. And then I went to my advanced individual training down at Fort Benning in Georgia and finished that up. And that particular program allows a high school student to serve in an Army Reserve unit to gain all of the benefits of service, to include medical and dental insurance coverage, tax-free shopping on military installations, and educational benefits for college, along with a paycheck that they get for doing those battle assemblies and that training.
What is the biggest takeaway, the key takeaway that you would like folks to know about the Army Reserve, the message that you would like to leave folks with?
So I think the fact that people as citizen soldiers are able to do both their job in the civilian community as well as being able to serve their nation is an incredibly important aspect of what we do. But our citizen soldiers are standing up every day, raising their right hand, and willing to do that call to service. And if people want more information about how they can be one of those citizen soldiers, they can go to usar.army.mil, or they can find us on our socials at Go Army, or talk to a local Army recruiter at any recruiting station.
Again, the U.S. Army Reserve celebrating 116 years of service this month. Brigadier General Fred Hockett is Deputy Commanding General of the U.S. Army Recruiting Command. General Hockett, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Hey, thanks so much, Chris. I hope you have a great day.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
This is another one of the more unusual thefts that we've had in the broken news. The California Highway Patrol has recovered $300,000 worth of stolen Legos this week. $300,000 worth of stolen Legos. So that's what, 4 or 5 sets? Those things aren't cheap. Happened on Tuesday. Arrests were made in Los Angeles and Orange County after officers were tipped off to a pair of boosters who would steal merchandise from retail stores and then deliver them to fences who would purchase the stolen goods and then resell them online. This is a whole enterprise. Investigators say the operators of the fencing locations would sell the stolen products for profit, obviously. The suspects were booked on charges of organized retail theft, grand theft, and conspiracy. And I saw photos of this. I mean, it was like this huge warehouse full of Legos of all the things to steal. But they are not cheap in the stores, and people love their Legos, so they would jump at the chance to buy these at a discount online, and these criminals be making money. But just an unusual theft. You wouldn't think, Legos. The first thing that I thought when I saw that story is, boy, talk about a bunch of blockheads. where's my rim shot when I really need it? Elsewhere in the broken news, out of Las Vegas, Sin City. There is a controversy involving a business dispute in Las Vegas. This caught my attention. The Spearmint Rhino Strip Club is taking its competitor to court. Spearmint Rhino filed a complaint in the U.S. District Court in Nevada saying the Peppermint Hippo Strip Club infringes on its trademark because the names are confusingly similar. The Spearmint Rhino and the Peppermint Hippo are locked in this battle over copyright over their names. Now, it should be noted that both club names are registered trademark, registered trademarks. Spearmint Rhino has been in business since 1992. I did not know that. It's what it says in the story. Somebody did their research on this big, important story. Spearmint Rhino has been in business since 1992. The Peppermint Hippo opened its location in Las Vegas just 2 years ago. It is named after a fictitious strip club in the animated TV series South Park. And I'm guessing that the creators of South Park probably came up with the name as a takeoff on the Spearmint Rhino to begin with. So, by extension, I think they've probably got a case. We will definitely follow this because it's an important story. Battle of the strip clubs in Las Vegas. I would think in Las Vegas, there's enough business to go around, you know? I mean, are they really being hurt all that much? I'm thinking there's enough business to go around in Sin City. Elsewhere in the broken news, the U.S. Coast Guard has solved the mystery of a house seen floating in the San Francisco Bay. Yes, there was a house seen floating in the San Francisco Bay since this past Sunday. Obviously, this aroused the curiosity of several people. Some said it conjured up images of the movie Up, you know, where the house floats away on balloons, only in this case, is floating on the water instead of floating in midair. It turns out, we now know what's going on. It turns out the house was one of many forced to leave the Redwood City Marina and relocate. The owners of the home, rather than tearing it down, apparently they wanted to develop, or there's been some controversy over these houses that were built in the Redwood City Marina District. So anyway, rather than abandon the house, tear it down, the owners of the house decided to move it to a new location at the Commodore Marina in Sausalito. And so the best way to get it from one marina to the other was to float it down the bay. So that's what they did. And that's what, but that must have been a very unusual sight. Not something you see every day, a house floating in San Francisco Bay. But now we know. A bakery owner in Kansas has asked her customers to be careful while eating the cookies that she recently sold after she discovered she lost her diamond ring in the dough. Dawn Monroe, owner of Sis Sweets Cookies and Cafe, said the diamond ring fell off her finger while she was at the shop, and she worries that maybe it ended up in the cookie dough. If you happen to find it, she said, I would be forever in your debt if you would return it. After all, it's worth $4,000. Talk about a fortune cookie. But I'm bum. Oh, my goodness. I'm on fire today. No word on whether anyone has discovered the diamond ring in a cookie. The Sis Sweets Cookies and Cafe. And finally, in the broken news this morning, this is actually kind of a funny twist I saw on a very serious subject that has been in the news, the question of border security and the number of people who are coming into this country undocumented. A 33-year-old man named Uğur, a migrant from Turkey, revealed that he paid a cartel $6,500 to drop him at the U.S. border, and his goal is to make his way to Los Angeles to work for DoorDash. That's his dream. This guy from Turkey wants to make it to Los Angeles. Specifically, he wants to go to Santa Monica. I don't know why Santa Monica, but I guess that's where he's determined he can strike it rich working for DoorDash. Uğur was among a group of six people who were interviewed by a news outlet along the southern border. He said he admitted that he had arrived in the country illegally, but he says, if U.S. government let me work, I can work. Every year, life in Turkey, very difficult. Economy, very bad. And we don't like our leader. He's a dictator. If you pay the Mexican people, the Mexican cartel money, that they let you come here, I pay $6,500 for Mexico and I come here. 1 or 2 days I stay in immigration, and after I want to live in Los Angeles. If I do DoorDash, I can earn $6,000. I just thought, again, not making fun of a very serious subject, border security and the swarm of illegal immigrants crossing the border. But of all the things, he's got a dream. It's all of these people who are coming in. They just want their piece of the American dream. And for Uğur, that is living in Santa Monica, working for DoorDash. Wow. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Did you know more than 80 million Americans depend on AM radio for their news, traffic, weather, sports, and a community connection? AM radio is the backbone of the emergency alert system, keeping Americans safe in dangerous times. This is News Director Matt Demchak. AM 1330 WFIN is here to serve you, and we take seriously our commitment to our listeners. We would love to hear what you value most about AM radio. Visit WeAreBroadcasters.com and tell us how you depend on AM.
Time now for your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. So as you're planning for your weekly grocery store trip, I mean, I know that's kind of traditional, right? On the weekend, you go and you do your grocery shopping for the week ahead. Actually, it's kind of interesting. According to a recent poll of 2,000 Americans, the average person actually makes 2 trips to the grocery store per week. So it's a little different than maybe what we used to do. We go more than once. We budget for $162. And I think that's per trip, not per week. That seems very low for a weekly grocery bill. But $162 per visit, 2 times per week. But this survey, this study also found that more than 3/4 of respondents, 76%, agreed that they are more likely to spend more than they would like if they were to grocery shop while hungry. And we've all done that, right? We've all gone to the grocery store when we're hungry, and it becomes really easy to blow your budget. And we've done this. My wife and I have done this. We go and we do our grocery shopping when we're hungry. Then we go and, you know, we'll get something to eat. We get home and we're unpacking all of the groceries and we think, why did we buy all this stuff? So obviously you can fix that by just going out to eat first and then go to the grocery store. You're much more likely to stick to your budget that way. But 76% agreed that they are more likely to spend more if they go to the grocery while they're hungry. 6 in 10 said that they are also likely to ignore their health goals if they are shopping while they're hungry. So that's something to keep in mind as well. It's not just financially it'll hit you in the pocket, but it'll hit you with your healthy goals as well. So they calculated it up, and they said that they find that if you go Shopping on an empty stomach, that will cost you an average of $26 more per trip. $26 is the number they attach to that. So now you know, that's how much more it will cost you if you go while you're hungry. The poll, by the way, conducted by the Dole Food Company. Individuals say that the folks in the survey say their standard grocery run takes about 39 minutes. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And the best time, the most popular time to go grocery shopping is between 10 a.m. and noon. That's what they say, between 10 a.m. and noon, the most popular time to go grocery shopping. The best time, though, to go grocery shopping is between 8 and 10 a.m. and the worst time between 4 and 6, which makes sense because that's right around dinner time when you are more likely to go when you're hungry. Over half of Americans, according to the survey, 56% do use a grocery list when they go shopping. 79% who use a list say they are less likely to overspend. But again, if you're hungry, all bets are off. And once again, my wife Kyra has joined us in the studio. It must be Friday, where we finish the week with another collection of yummy and easy to make recipes from Kyra's Kitchen. Good morning.
Good morning.
So this dish is really, really good. We had this earlier this week.
Yes.
And I can attest that this is definitely
yummy. And
it's
even good. I had the leftovers yesterday for lunch. And
it's good as leftovers.
Oh, my gosh. It was good.
Yes. I can imagine because of the seasonings and everything, get another day to sort of soak all of that up. And it is a recipe for Mexican chicken with cheese sauce.
Yes. So 8 boneless chicken tenderloins, 1 teaspoon of chili powder, 1 teaspoon of garlic powder, 1 teaspoon of onion powder, 1/2 teaspoon of crushed red pepper flakes, 1/2 teaspoon of dried basil, 2 teaspoons of paprika, 1.5 teaspoons of ground cumin, and 1/2 teaspoon of salt, and 1/4 teaspoon of pepper. I kind of did the salt and pepper to taste. I did not.
Yeah. Specific amounts.
Yeah.
And
that's
a lot of paprika and cumin too.
Yeah.
So
you could do that to taste too.
Yeah. You can cut back on that a little bit
if you want. So, and then your cheese sauce is 2 tablespoons of flour, 2 tablespoons of butter, 2 cups of milk, 1/4 teaspoon of salt, 1/8 teaspoon of cayenne pepper, 1/4 teaspoon of paprika, and 1 cup of cheddar cheese. So, for your chicken part, mix your seasonings and then season both sides of your chicken strips well. Place the chicken strips on and grill in your air fryer at 375 degrees for 20 minutes or until done. You can also do a pan fry if you want. I just did it in our air fryer.
Yeah.
So it was, and it was good.
You could probably do it on the grill, I would think.
Oh, yeah. You could do it on the grill.
You know.
I mean, during the summer. Oh, that would be really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. We might have to try
that. Like, so it's kind of like a rub.
Yeah, it is.
That you're doing with the chicken.
Yes.
And then you put that on the grill or in the air fryer or whatever.
Wherever.
Have you.
Yeah. Yep. And cook her up and then set that aside. For the cheese sauce, in a medium sized saucepan, melt your butter over medium heat. Whisk in your flour. Cook until it turns golden brown. Then add your milk. Whisk slowly until it the sauce thickens. Once it is thickened, add your seasoning and your cheese. Stir until the cheese is all melted and the sauce is nice and smooth. And then serve that on top of your chicken and enjoy.
Yeah, the cheese sauce, even though it's cheddar cheese, it doesn't like glob up.
No.
It stays nice and creamy.
Yeah.
And all of that.
Yes.
But again, you're adding more paprika and then some cayenne pepper to that. Yep. So this is going to have a bit of a bite to it.
It does. It has a little bit of a kick.
It's just good. Something to keep in mind if you like that.
Yeah. If you don't,
then
you
more
can
power
always,
to you.
But you could always eliminate, you know, the hot stuff. And, and
it's still good.
It's still good. You're going to still have plenty of seasoning.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So along with that, we've got a recipe for seasoned rice. And we did the chicken over the rice.
Yep.
And it was really good. So the seasoned rice.
So 1 cup of uncooked long grain white rice, 2 tablespoons of butter, 2 cups of chicken broth or water. If you don't have chicken broth, water is fine. You may want to add a little bit of salt. 1 teaspoon of chili powder, 1 teaspoon of garlic powder, and 1/2 teaspoon of ground cumin, and then salt to taste if you want.
Right.
And depending on what type of butter you use. So if you use an unsalted butter, then you probably definitely want to add a little bit of salt. So rinse your rice in a mesh strainer until water draining is clear. This is optional, but it helps remove some of the starch so the rice isn't so mushy. Add the rice, butter, and seasoning to a medium saucepan. Bring to a rapid boil over high heat. Stir frequently. Then once it gets to that boil, stir once more, then cover, turn the heat down to a low simmer, less than medium low, and cook for 20 minutes. You're just letting all those liquids soak up into that rice. Remove and cover, let it stand for about 2 to 3 minutes, and then fluff it with a fork and you're enjoy it with your chicken.
Yeah.
So what I did was I had I put the rice and then chicken on top of the rice and then the cheese sauce on top of that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's yummy. Yeah. It really is. It's a delicious dish.
We will be
dish.
Doing this one again. It was. It was really good.
Absolutely. And then for dessert, we have a recipe for Nutty Bar ice cream cake.
Yes, I love Nutty Bars, and I'm getting into that ice cream mood. So
it is that time of year. It is. Yes.
So 2 boxes of Nutty Bars, 3 quarts of vanilla ice cream, 1 cup of peanut butter melted, 11-ounce jar of hot fudge, 1 cup of peanut butter chips, and 1 cup of mini chocolate chips. So line a 9 by 13 inch dish with plastic wrap. That's so then you can bring it up and out out of the dish after it's all set, so you can cut it. So it's just much easier. Put 1 layer of your Nutty Bars in the bottom. Add a layer of your ice cream. You might want to let your ice cream sit out just for a little bit to kind of melt, because then it'll be easier to spread.
A little softer.
Yeah. I use a metal spatula, and I dip it in hot water to get the spatula hot, so that helps me smooth out the ice cream.
There you go.
So then smooth that out with your warm spatula. Drizzle some hot fudge and some peanut butter on top of that first layer. Then sprinkle with your peanut butter and your chocolate chips. Then repeat that with another layer of Nutty Bars, ice cream, peanut butter, and your peanut butter melted and your hot fudge, and then sprinkle that your chocolate chips all on top of that and your peanut butter chips. And
so you're gonna layer this lasagna style.
Yes, correct. Yeah. And then cover and freeze for a few hours or overnight. That's fine also. And then when you're ready to serve, drizzle with a little bit more of your hot fudge and enjoy.
No calories in this at all.
Nope.
You got the Nutty Bars, the peanut butter, the hot fudge, the chocolate chips, the peanut butter chips.
Yeah. The ice cream. Don't forget the ice cream.
The ice cream. Ice cream may be the healthiest part of that recipe. So the recipes for
really
the...
But it's really good.
It is really good. Mexican chicken with cheese sauce, the seasoned rice, and the Nutty Bar ice cream cake are all posted on the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page, right?
Yep.
At Kyra's Kitchen, WFIN, where you can find all of those recipes and others that we've had in the past. If you heard some of the recipes we've had in the past, or if you're new to the party, you can go over to the Facebook page and find all of the previous recipes there. If you have one that you would like to share, by all means, you can post that on the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page. Make a request for something you may be looking for, and we'll get Kyra on the case that way as well. We also have the link posted up at our webpage at goodmornings.net. My wife, Kyra, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. Check us out online at goodmornings.net. Coming up Monday morning on the program, for those who have had a run-in with the law that remains unresolved, the Findlay Municipal Court's upcoming Safe Surrender Day may be the opportunity to clear that case once and for all. We'll have details. So until Monday morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day, a great weekend. We'll catch you back here next week.